Good evening, everyone. It's a delight to have all of you here this evening, tonight especially, not only because it's Good Friday, but also because last year on Good Friday, it was just myself and a few other staff here all alone. But I'm also glad to see all of you here tonight because it's unlikely that you are here if you're generically religious. The generically religious are unlikely to show up tonight. It seems increasingly common and popular to be one of two things in our society, and that is either generically religious or entirely secular. This past week, a new survey came out from the Gallup poll, and it was saying that now for the first time in our nation's history, more than half of U.S. adults do not have a church membership. From the beginning, when they began to survey in 1937, all the way to the year 2000, church membership among adults has stayed about the same, about 70%. But since the year 2000, it's dropped precipitously, now only 47%, in part because being secular is now very in vogue in our country. But we've been generically religious for a long time before that. And what I mean by that is that there are many who might identify as a Christian, but also consider our faith to just be one of many religions that can be taken in bits and pieces and all blended together. You take a little bit of Jesus, a little bit of Buddha, you take some Eastern meditation, some teachings from Islam, some answers about human sexuality from the LGBTQ movement. You blend it all together like you're making some high-protein $8 smoothie from Whole Foods. You put it all together and you have this great religious hybrid. We drink that stuff down. But what we mark here tonight insists that Christianity can't be part of any generically religious hybrid. And why? Because of what we'll say here in just a few moments. We're reading through the Passion narrative. We're in the midst of it. In a few moments, we're going to cry out together, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him. And we will say those words about our God. No other faith. No other philosophy, nothing else in all the world does anything like that. The cross is entirely unique. It cannot be mixed in with anything else. It is either everything or it is nothing. And the Old Testament passage that prepares us for this and for this night is especially Isaiah 53. 500 years or so before Jesus hung on the cross, this prophet Isaiah spoke mysteriously about someone called a suffering servant. And up until when Jesus died and people were to read this, they would imagine that Isaiah was probably speaking about the nation of Israel as a whole, and somehow the people of God were suffering for the world as a whole. But then once Jesus was crucified, a light switch went on, and those who read this realized that Isaiah was prophesying. He was seeing and speaking about Jesus, especially when he says, he was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And as one from whom men hide their face, he was despised. Despised and rejected. Do any of us know the full weight of those words and how they feel? All of us know what it's like to be rejected. Older women rejected by their husbands for younger women. That's so common in our culture, it's a cliche. Or being passed over, rejected for that job that you so desperately needed, that you had worked so hard for, but you didn't get it. Or maybe that university that you had dreamt of going to all of your life, but they rejected you. Or that friend, that one best friend, or the one that you thought was something like a best friend who no longer initiates with you, who no longer returns your texts, who no longer brings you in or invites you over at all. Or not making that team, or not making that squad, or not getting that invite. And technology has made rejection so much more easy. So much more public as well, especially for young people. Young people, through your devices, you know where all of your friends are and where you aren't constantly. So rejection, it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. It's constant. And it spares no one, men or women, young or old, married, single. It spares no one. But despised. Do any of us know what it's like to be despised? Do any of us here tonight think that we are despised? Maybe some of us are. Divorce can cause former spouses to despise one another. Our political division certainly causes us to despise each other. But the combination of being despised and rejected, it's far less common, it's far more extreme. And what that means is that what Isaiah sees when he depicts this person, this suffering servant, whom we now know to be Jesus, he depicts him as suffering in the extreme, despised and rejected. One author said it's suffering on the extreme frontier of human experience. And again, no other religion, no other faith, no other philosophy does anything like that. Nothing else sees their God, their object of worship, as suffering the worst of what we experience and the worst of what we do to one another. All the other gods of this world, they're far above that suffering. Buddha sitting serenely at peace above and beyond all that form of extreme suffering. Muhammad was not a sufferer. He was a conqueror. He was a victor, never a sufferer. And make no mistake, what we mark and what we remember tonight is that we crucified our God who came to us in our own skin and our own bones. And that is very different. That is entirely unique. As Fleming Rutledge says, that's the most compelling argument for the truth of Christianity. The most compelling argument for the truth of Christianity is that the cross is at its center, because humankind's religious imagination could never have produced such an image, and it hasn't. Nothing else has. No one else has. No one else has imagined anything like God as the suffering servant for us. Despised and rejected for us. Despised and rejected because that's our experience. That is our plight. That is the worst of it. That is our reality, that's our consequence, the consequence of our sin and the resulting pain and loss and darkness and death we all face, and God bore it all. God came in our own bones and he bore it all. He suffered it fully and completely for us that we might be rescued by him from it and not experience that inevitable end of the consequences that we have chosen and actually be given life, new life, a share in his own life. God crucified by us. We call it good. We call it what happened tonight, we call it good because it was good for us. And because it also revealed the unfathomable goodness of God to us in his mercy and in his grace to us. Do you know how God sees you? In our sin and our brokenness, we see him as our enemy, but do you know how he sees you? We certainly are his enemies, or at least we were. But in the gospel, he sees us differently. He sees us like a story that I recently read about George Orwell, famous author of the sci-fi fiction novel 1984. He fought in the Spanish Civil War, and he wrote about an experience that he had on the front lines fighting fascism. He and another soldier were snipers, and their job was to go out into the middle of the night and crawl out of their trenches and crawl along the ground and to look for enemy soldiers across the way and to shoot them. And right before dawn, one morning, U.S. planes were going to come in and to bomb the area near them. And just as they heard the planes coming, sirens in the opposite bunker went off, and Orwell saw a figure stand up in the distance. It was a young man, half naked, only wearing oversized trousers that kept falling down. He had to hold them up with one hand because he was running and holding in his other hand what was probably a message for some officer because the bombing raid was coming. And it was Orwell's job to shoot this man and to kill him, his enemy. Orwell writes, "I refrained from shooting him. I had come to shoot at fascists, but a man who is holding up his trousers isn't a fascist. He is visibly a fellow creature, similar to yourself, and you don't feel like shooting him." Friends, when God looks at us, he doesn't see what other people see. He doesn't look upon us and see our physical appearance or our wealth or our lake houses or our cars or our companies or our degrees or our accomplishments or anything like that. He looks at us and he sees us as we are, despised and rejected, fragile, desperate, vulnerable people on the brink of death, trying to cover up all of our spiritual nakedness and all of the hurts and the scars that sin has left. When Jesus came from heaven to live among us and to live for us, he lived at that level. He came and he lived at that level. He went down to the deepest extremes of our need. Yes, we were God's enemies, and we proved it by crucifying him. But in his grace, he looks at us like those running frantically through life with one hand trying to hold up our trousers and declares that we will no longer be his enemies. That we will no longer be his enemies. And he went to the cross to make it so. He went to the cross to make us his friends. So pay attention to everything that we're going to continue to read tonight. Pay close attention. because there is nothing else in the entire world like it. Amen.